Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint. Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical everyday solutions that make a difference. That's Eco Living in Action, Thursdays at 2:30pm on Otago Access Radio. Proudly supported by the Dunedin City Council.
And welcome to Eco Living in Action, the sustainable living show that focuses on the everyday things that we can do to make a difference. I'm Maureen Howard, a sustainable living facilitator for the Dunedin community. Well, making our own clothes is something that many families used to do, right from growing and processing the yarn to dyeing and creating the cloth. Today, the clothing industry is very different and it has a very significant ecological footprint. About 25% of chemicals used globally are used in the textile industry. A single cotton t-shirt uses approximately 2,500 to 3,000 litres of water. In general, we can greatly reduce the ecological footprint of a product by doing more ourselves using lower impact processes. And in today's programme, I'm chatting about with my guest about the process of weaving, where thread or yarn is turned into fabric. Weaving's an ancient skill and practiced in different ways across cultures. It's a method where two different sets of yarn are interlaced at right angles to form the cloth. Here to chat with me about the topic of weaving is Christina Keller.
Hi, Maureen.
Hello, Christina. Now, Christina, you're owner of Weaving on Hillingdon,
yes.
Where you make scarves and other things on your hand loom. And you've got a background now. You're quite a very qualified lady. Got a master's or an equivalent of a master's in textile design and a master's in fine arts. And you were head of the textile section at the Dunedin School of Art, isn't that right?
Yes. So
now you've branched out, you've got your own business. And
yeah, it came a little bit by circumstance because my position at the art school was discontinued 4 years ago and I just needed to do something and I thought I wanted to use my skills. And a couple of years ago I came across a building plan for a loom by Andreas Müller in Germany, and I built my own loom. And
wow.
And today I have a weaving studio, I have one apprentice, and I teach community classes.
Right, okay. Well, so I presume you had some help to build this loom, did you? Or?
The first loom I did pretty much by myself, and then the second loom I had help by my friend Joanna Pauli, who is a woodworking whiz.
Right,
but the loom, that building plan is actually designed so that people can build their own looms, but it is not for beginners, it's really for a bit more advanced weavers.
Yes, and so someone who really knows how looms work, and I guess so that it all fits together.
Yeah, it was designed actually to create weaving workshops in Africa, the first one in Ethiopia, because the work of the carpenters was so expensive, and Andreas Müller was asked to get a weaving production going there, and he said, that's too expensive, we do it ourselves, and he designed something that you can basically make from some pieces of wood and a handsaw and nails and a hammer, and my version is a bit more fancy because I had the wood cut for me and then used power drills and stuff, but
right.
But it is pretty simple. Like basically the traditional loom to today, like the principle is still the same, and you can build it very high tech and you can build a loom very low tech. So it depends what you're aiming for.
Yes, so very sustainable, you know, and resilient, I guess, you know, if we ever want to go back to making our own clothing.
I guess it is resilient. I mean, it takes a long time to make things, and the individual project will, the individual product or so will be, like the money value. There is a problem today with the way we appreciate our time and our money, because like I've been making tea towels lately with Adrian Mulqueen, who is my student or has been for over a year now, and we're making tea towels and we sell the tea towels for $35 a pop but we're not even sure if that's really enough money to cover our costs, but it pretty much is, probably. And the thing is, I think that when you have something that is made here, that the value, like, you should appreciate it more.
Yes.
Like, I see in the, a modern industrial loom today, if you stand in front of the loom, you see the fabric rolling out, like, from a plotter, so color print, and you don't even see the threads moving anymore because it is so fast. But as those machines so high-tech, you actually need, the machines are very expensive, and to get the investment of the machine back, you actually need to produce so many things. I saw a weaving workshop in Canada where 100 workers worked on 400 looms and produced 500,000 yards per week.
Wow.
And I think on 4 of those 100 looms, there was something I found remotely interesting. And so the thing is that it only works within the system that we need spring curtains and winter curtains and a new couch every couple of years and things like that. So if you want to go more sustainable, one way to go would be, like, it's like slow textiles in a way, like a slow food movement or so.
Yes.
It's like a slow textile thing. And my reality in the last few years was that I was all of a sudden out of job, and I was living with little money for a long time now, and I have seen more and more people losing their jobs. And so you get a bit down and depressed, and you don't know how to pay your next bill, but at the same time you have lots of time. And I just thought there is actually lots of people who maybe don't have much money, but they have actually lots of time. And it's very rewarding to weave because you sit there. I really enjoy the rhythm of it as well, and the time you spend there, and you make something, and you can see what you make.
Yeah, it's like, you can see it coming out. Yeah,
you can see it coming out, and then when you have it, like, I have people that have those tea towels of mine that say they can't use them possibly as tea towels. And I say, yes, you can, because they will last a long time. It's good quality. We make them from 100% cotton. And it is a little bit hard to get access to things, so we actually buy it from Canada. And it is fulfilling to do those things.
Yes. And I think, and you can choose your own design.
You can choose your own design, and you can, like, I mean, the way we do it, to just, if you, the difference is maybe what we should split up here in understanding is, do I want to weave as a business to kind of make some money with it and support myself with it, or am I doing it as a hobby with nice benefits and stuff? Mm-hmm. So if I do it as a hobby, I can weave every tea towel in a different color, different whatever. If I do it as a business, I need to actually still, within the handmaking, make everything as efficient as I can. So, for example, what Adrian and I have chosen, we have two different stripe patterns. I have one on my loom, and she has one on her loom. And so we have different colors. So we make 10 or 15 towels on the same warp. Like in weaving, you have those long threads you roll onto the loom. That's called the warp. And it's almost the same time and preparing a loom if you prepare it for 2 tea towels, let's say, or for 20. So we would do it for 15 or 20, and then we can weave every towel with a different color through, so you can still make like 10 or 20 different color tea towels
right.
on there.
Yes.
But if you want to say, oh, it's so creative and everything is new, that's just taking more time. And so the slower you go, the less likely it is you get your money while you bake, you know?
Yes. But I guess the listeners, they'll be interested in terms of a hobby.
Yeah.
And perhaps making gifts for family, like coming up to Christmas. Yeah. Like, they would make fantastic gifts, wouldn't they?
Yes. I've actually been called today. Like, I have my work at the moment at the gardens in the former Hemlins bookshop as the pop-up gallery artist of the month. And I got a phone call this morning saying, where can I buy your tea towels? I want them as Christmas gift. And so that is really cool. And I have more people that want to make things now. And so this year I decided that I wanted to teach classes. So I have little classes where you actually go and you subscribe for an 8-week block, or like it's once a week for 3 hours. And then at the end of that, you maybe have a couple of scarves woven or something, yeah. or a couple of tea towels, depending on what level you're on. And I have done 3 of those weaving modules now. And in the first one, I had 5 students. And now in this one, I have 10 students.
That's great. So, I'd like to vouch for you. You're an excellent teacher, Christina.
Oh, thanks.
You've taught me a few different things. Soap making and grafting. You know?
Thanks. Yeah. I actually just had this creative communities grant that the city has was really good for this because they want the community to get involved in creative things. And so I got some money so I could rent a venue. And it has really developed in the last 3 years or so that I would like to do more teaching and multiply that skill in the city. And now having done it this year in the Northeast Valley community rooms, actually, thanks to them as well, that's a great facility, I'm now looking at maybe getting my finding a room that I can set up shop permanently. So I see that about 1/3 would be my looms and my production, and 2/3 would be tables for teaching. Because if more people are interested, I could actually teach more flexibly. At the moment, I have to book for whatever, $10 per hour or so. And so when somebody is more interested and wants to go a bit in depth, at the moment it becomes financially unviable and unsustainable. But if I had a space where I could set up shop and I could be in, say, 3 days a week, I'm weaving there. And if other people come and weave alongside, that is much more possible for me and for them financially as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. And, you know, so back to the sort of the sustainability aspects of weaving, I was looking on the internet when I was preparing for this chat that we're having today, and I had read that 23% of the total energy used in textiles is used in the weaving stage of cloth production. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's nearly 1/4 of the energy used. So even if, you know, you're not starting right from very scratch, you know, we are cutting out a significant proportion.
I mean, we cannot, as hand weavers, we will never be able to somehow compete with the textile industry. I think the textile industry is a very big entity, and they are really going where it is all about mass production and producing a big lot of things with big machines and whatever. And so I've thought quite a lot about that. And in New Zealand, we hardly have any production left, which actually really worries me as well. And I have spent last year about 7 months waiting for yarn I had spun, and I asked to be spun in New Zealand. And I think we talked about that the last time when I was here talking about dyeing, that there was a difficulty in getting New Zealand made yarn. And I think it is becoming even now increasingly difficult. So we have to, as weavers, cut back our expectations that we can cut out of every step. Like in my classes, there is so much stuff around. Actually, you can make lots of things just from the materials that are around. There is looms around. I went down to the Southern Institute of Technology, and they had a big pile of looms in their storage, and I just went there and bought 14 looms one day. So I want to have a room now for weaving. If anybody can tell me where to get a not expensive 60 square meter room.
So you've got these 14 looms.
I have 26 looms at the moment. I'm totally ready to start a little weaving school. And my house is a bit, and has become a bit dysfunctional because my extra bedroom is full with yarns. Because thanks to some people helping, and thanks to Clive Humphreys at the art school, they had lots of yarns that had been donated over the years by the Milton Mill and by private people for the use for the community. And as they don't teach weaving anymore, I came home half a year ago to having like 10 of those big plastic woven Chinese bags full of wool in front of my door, and they are now in my extra bedroom. And then I popped a couple of 10 looms or so on top of that. So that bedroom is not not functional anymore. So I really urgently need to move my weaving out of my house.
Right. Oh, well, I'll give it some thought. I'm sure listeners will be giving it some thought. And they can they can contact us, and we'll give the contact details at the end. But so back to the process of weaving. Let's talk about that a little bit. Now, you've talked about the warp and the weft, is that right?
Yes. So warp is the long threads that you would wind up on the loom. So they think of them as the horizontal threads that are in front of you.
That's vertical.
Oh, sorry, the vertical ones, the ones that go from top to bottom, the vertical ones. And then horizontally, you put in threads that are woven in, and that is the weft. And so you can be, you set up for quite, for your whole project, the warp. That is your given, once you've decided what you want to do. And in the weft, you can be completely free in what you pop in as the weft.
And you really, then the size of your loom will be very important, wouldn't it, compared for the size of the material?
The width of the loom will determine how wide you can weave. Like, I have looms that are about, like, from about 40 centimeter to 80 centimeter in my classes. And they are tabletop looms, and people take them home with them and can weave at home. So those, at the moment, people need a car for my classes, or somebody, like a lift, that somebody that will take them with their loom to class. But
are they very heavy, these looms?
Not very much. I mean, under 10 kilogram.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, you can carry them around. It's a little bit hard to handle. But also, because we're in the classes, you're never alone. If you, for anybody who wants a hand, they get a hand from somebody else.
And what's the mechanism that you use? I know there's so many different types of looms out there, but
So you have your threads somehow individual, like the warp threads are individually put through something that's called heddles. So it's like either little holes. It's getting a bit complicated, but let's just say simply it is, they are put individually through some strings or slots and holes that you can lift up and put down. So some of your threads you will lift up, some of your threads will stay down or be pulled down, and then you have your weft thread on a shuttle, which can either be just a stick with two notches at the end, or it can be, it can look like a little boat with a bobbin in it, and that's the thing you throw back and forth. So let's say I have half of the threads up, like every second thread, and I throw my weft through, and then you have a beater that is something like a, we know that also as a comb, this thing with, looks a bit like a comb that's closed on both sides. So you can push your weft thread towards your cloth, and then you put the other threads up, so the ones that were up go down, and the ones that were down go up, and you throw your weft back, and then you have something.
And so when you say throwing it back and forward, that sounds like quite a skill to learn, is it?
I mean, the thing in this, the skill to learn in weaving is that it's a combination of many different things that are all by themselves quite simple, but you need to learn all those different steps. So the throwing in is actually not difficult. I think if I had my school, I would prepare some looms that have the warp ready on them, and then probably do some classes for children or so as well, because everybody that can, that has a decent kind of mobility can learn weaving. Like in Germany, where I come from, it's used as therapy for blind people as well, and for differently abled, like intellectually differently abled people as well. So there is, I would say anybody can learn weaving. Would you enjoy it? That depends on if you are somebody that enjoys to kind of get sucked in by being focused on something. So it's like, I think it can be a bit intimidating in the beginning. And in my classes, I have often beginners and not beginners mixed, and they get really frightened the first class, and I say, don't worry, if you don't understand what you're doing, just do it. And then after 2 or 3 weeks, they are so happy because they already have woven the first scarf and can't believe they did it.
Right, yes.
So it's really a thing, you learn step by step and you learn by repetition.
And although it's by hand, it's fairly fast, isn't it?
It can be, yes. So, like, let's say if you weave a scarf out of thick wool that may be kind of similar wool you would weave for knitting, then the weaving itself can be done in 2 or 3 hours, but the preparing is a bit longer. And I mean, if I weave a tea towel, I have something on my loom that's called a fly shuttle, which means instead of throwing my shuttle by hand, I have a little block on each side, pushing it from left to right, and I pull it on the string. So it's all very mechanical, and when you look at it, you can understand what's happening. But this fly shuttle is much faster, so we can weave a tea towel in an hour or so. But sometimes it goes really well, and then it goes really fast, and sometimes something goes wrong.
Yes.
And you spend three times the time, so then your end product isn't as nice, and it took you three times as long, so that doesn't really come out right all the time either. But fly shuttle is quite a great invention that is not really used much for the hand weavers, so in New Zealand, and I would like to teach that more to the people who are already professional hobby weavers, because
right. It
is something that could make things faster and more productive for them, but in an enjoyable way as well.
Mm. And you've just got the one, have you, with the fly shuttle?
No, I have three at the moment.
Right, yeah.
And you can actually turn, like my student has turned weavers will know what I mean, a Mekia loom. She has turned the Mekia loom into this fly shuttle without having this very heavy beater that they usually have. So it's done with cardboard and a little couple of pieces of wood. So it's quite fulfilling. And like weaving, when the fly shuttle was invented, that was the point in history, actually, when things came into mass production, because weaving went much faster. People did not have yarn anymore, because the yarn was spun by the women. The men were the weavers, the children made the bobbins. And when you had the fly shuttle, you used much more yarn, and which first led to the weavers trying to kill the guy who invented the loom and break the loom and burn down his house. But they couldn't stop the invention, really, and so it led to the development of the spinning jenny, and to the development of mass production, basically.
Right, and then everything took off. And now we've got lots of cheap clothing.
Yes, and the computer was developed after developing the loom as well, so that's time for another show.
But but it is interesting. We see how technology comes along, and it kind of, I don't know, it creates its own market, you know, mm-hmm. doesn't it, really?
And weaving was often in time, in history, weaving was a few times really a turning point, a revolution turning point in history. And I think somehow, like I heard a year ago or a couple of years ago, somebody was talking on the radio about where do you see technology going and sustainability and stuff. And he said, of course, people won't go back to hand looms or something. And I was thinking, actually, why not? Like, really, we have, like, we in mass production, we need less and less and less people to do things. What do we want all those people to do? So why don't we make things in, like, co-op way of production and make some things that, yeah, they might be more expensive than the mass-produced things, but people will probably honor them more because they actually are done in a totally different context.
Yes. Yes.
And I really, like, I hardly buy any new mass-product textiles, I must say. I'm an op shopper.
Right. I'm the same. Yes. And, okay, so now if people want to get started in weaving, let's say that they mm-hmm. might have no experience, what would first steps would you advise for them?
Either would be the question, do you know somebody who knows weaving? Like, I think for weaving it is advised to start with people. My next classes will be in March, so I offer those 8 weeks blocks, so that you don't need to. It's a good thing for tasting it and saying, like, do I want more or not?
Yes. And what's your website?
My website is christinekeller.net. That's Christine with a CH and an E in the end, and then Keller, KELLER.net.
Right. Okay. So people can check you up. And also they can contact me at ecolivinginaction.
Thank you.
At gmail.com, and I'll pass on your details as well. And I guess you've got a few favorite websites, do you?
Yeah, there is the Handwoven magazine in the U.S., has a great mailing list. They will want to sell you things every day. That's called interweavestore.com. And while you don't need to buy everything they offer at all, they have really good book lists and they have free ebooks as well. And I found it really helpful to go, like, Ashford looms are made here in Ashburton, And they have some great YouTubes on how to start. Like, the simplest loom for starting is the rigid heddle loom. And you can look that up and how to use it. And you can find them often on TradeMe as well. So looms are around because some people just stopped using them and come into class and weave with us.
Okay, well, thank you, Christina. So I hope you continue to go from strength to strength in your business.
Thank you.
And your passion for weaving and among other cloth making things that you do. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this show about weaving with my guest, Christina Keller. I'm Maureen Howard, and you've been listening to Eco Living in Action, supported by the Dunedin City Council. So thanks for listening.
Soon he moves on in. The logs we fall to the line he clears away. Eight horses four by two and the two-wheeled wooden rim. The axle groans at least six times a day. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milky Boys. Keep them logs rolling. Drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. Mill train sweats and strains most all day. Down 20 miles a track to feed the mill. Stoker keeps the firebox full with the offcuts from the day, so that later on she'll make that 3 mile hill. The mill first does strip and bark the logs and sends them to the benchman standing by. He slips the mill saw through, never mind what slips and pokes. It's then that you'll see the chips and the sawdust fly. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milby Boys. Keep them logs rolling down. For we'll drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. When the weather's fine, they'll be down at the Hamlin side. When a nor'wester comes on, then it's down to Flinders Bay. Through grueling surf, you'll see them big ships spray. Spare a thought for us chaps who work an hour. Next time you walk the streets of a London town, in the forest, in the mill, on the line and in the yard, just to keep them dime logs rolling down. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milky Boys. Keep them logs rolling down. For we'll drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. Keep them logs rolling, boys, down to the Milky Boys. Keep them logs rolling down, or we'll drive drive the crosscuts through just to show what we can do. We'll pave all the streets of London town. We'll pave all the streets of London town. Pave all the streets.